Welcome to another intriguing episode of the Dream Hub podcast, the show where we delve into the mysteries of the mind and the unexplored corners of human consciousness. I'm Melissa Johnson, and today we're venturing into the fascinating intersection of psychedelics, psychic abilities, and the unknown with our guest, Sean McNamara. Sean hails from Denver, Colorado, and he wears many hats as a consciousness researcher, author, meditation teacher, and mental health counselor. With a profound interest in developing psychic abilities, such as telepathy and remote viewing, Sean has dedicated his life to exploring the depths of the human psyche and teaching others to unlock their potential. In 2022, Sean embarked on an audacious experiment dubbed the Pure Rich Project, investigating the impact of psychedelics on psychic abilities. So buckle up as we dive into Sean's world of mind expansion, spiritual exploration, and the quest to understand the essence of our being. Welcome to the Dream Hub podcast, Sean. I'm so excited to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm really excited.
I've been following you for a while now, and I'm just going to put it out there. The listeners may know I love psilocybin, and I love, well, I don't know, I'm a bit scared of some psychedelics. I haven't done many, but I can definitely see the healing potential in psilocybin, and I have dabbled in it a bit myself, and it definitely has helped to expand my consciousness. I'd love to hear your story about how, you know, you came to get into all of this, like what initially sparked your interest in psychic abilities and consciousness research.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so basically, I became interested in exploring consciousness because of my fear of death. And that came from things that happened in my childhood. When I was 7 years old, my appendix burst, or it almost burst. It burst as they were taking it out of my body. And I was told that I was this close to dying. And I really started thinking about death at a young age. And in my early 20s, I had heart surgery. And so I thought that I could approach my question about death through religion and spirituality. But the religion I was raised in, I was raised Catholic, but it's very faith-based, where, you know, here are the answers. They're in this book, or listen to the priest tells you. But my personality is very inquisitive and very stubborn, and I was not satisfied with just believing what I was told to believe. I wanted to know, does something continue after the physical body dies? Does heaven and hell and all these, just told what to believe. I was not satisfied by that. So then I started practicing Buddhism for a few years, thinking that perhaps this other religion and this other path of practice would be a gateway so that I could get my own information, get my own evidence about something larger than the physical world. And even Buddhism, people say it's not a religion, it's a philosophy, but it is a religion. There are many things that are taught in it that can only be taken on faith unless you are an extraordinary meditator who has direct experience. Usually those types of people live in retreat, meditating 24 hours a day. And I just realized too at a certain point that religions have their own limitations, that if I couldn't draw outside the lines, I couldn't ask certain questions, because if they contradicted the teachings, well, the religion's role is to preserve the religion primarily. And so if you think differently, that's a threat to the structure. And so it's not welcome. So I decided to leave all religion. And so I'm not really criticizing religions. I'm just saying this is how they operate necessarily. And it didn't work for me as an individual. It didn't work for my personality. So I left behind religion. And I started thinking about how could I prove to myself that something continues after death? And as when I was a kid, when I was in college, I had heard about the out-of-body experience. And there were maybe one or two books available to me at the time. And I spent a brief period of time trying to have an out-of-body experience, but I was very young. I was undisciplined. I didn't have any meditation experience. I didn't really know how to work with my mind. And the instructions in those books weren't great. But now, many years later, when I started to take a second look at it, there were many more books available to the public about how to have an out-of-body experience with really good instructions. And by then, I'd already been meditating for many years, so I knew how to work with my mind. And I trained and trained and trained with these instructions that had nothing to do with religion. I didn't need anybody's permission or blessing. I didn't have to pay to go on an expensive retreat. I just followed the instructions lying in my own bed or on the couch. And then I had my first out-of-body experience, and like that, my fear of death was gone. I had the evidence that I'd been looking for. And I kept training and having more out-of-body experiences. And eventually I set that aside because for me, it was hard work. I'm not a person who any psychic ability comes naturally to or any mystical experience. It's not easy for me. I wasn't born able to have these. I'm the kind of person that has to work really, really hard and consistently to produce the desired effect. So after having enough out-of-body experiences to be satisfied for a lifetime, I stopped. But I wanted to start teaching these things to the public to help set them free to pursue their own spiritual quest and not have to depend on religion or depend on teachers who might have ulterior motives. I wanted to give people tools to explore their own consciousness. So I knew that if I brought a bunch of people in the room, I couldn't show them an out-of-body experience. I couldn't lie down on the floor and leave my body, and they wouldn't see anything. And
That would be
it
so
wouldn't work
cool.
that way.
Watch
It'd be really
this, and you're
weird,
just
right?
laying there.
Yeah. And I'm exaggerating, but you can't show it to someone. It's very subjective. It's absolutely subjective. But what could I do that other people could see something with their own two eyes? And I knew about people doing telekinesis, and I saw some people doing it online. And most of the people I thought, this isn't real. But there were a few people who I thought, this is the legitimate mind over matter that they're doing. And I decided to learn how to do it. I trained myself over several months using the basic concepts I knew from meditation training about using my intention and my attention and developing a special breathing method to relax myself. And just experimenting a lot, hour after hour, month after month. And finally, I could make a very small object move. And I'm talking about a piece of tinfoil or paper balanced on a needle covered by a glass container to prevent the wind moving it or anything like that. And that was something that people, I could show them. They'd walk in the room and I could make it move and show them. And then I could teach it to them so they could do it themselves. Because one thing I realized along the way is it's nearly impossible to convince anybody of anything that contradicts their existing belief system. Only they can change their mind. And the only way they'll do it is by having their own direct experience. I made the mistake of telling people about the telekinesis before I could show it to them, just telling them my experience. And they started to think I was crazy, or they just didn't know how to, they didn't know how to respond, which was quite embarrassing, I think, to both of us. But then I started teaching classes, and people could do it right away, which was really lovely because by then I had figured out the easiest instructions, the easiest path to follow. And then my journey continued from there. At some point I learned remote viewing, which is a form of clairvoyance. And now my focus is telepathy. And with the remote viewing and telepathy, the really great things about those two psychic abilities is they're very evidential. The telekinesis is too, but there are ways where you could produce it where it's not the real psychic ability. It could be an ordinary physical effect like excess heat or vibrations. So it's tough to tell what's the real thing. But if I'm holding a picture in an envelope and I ask you to draw something on a piece of paper telling me what's inside the envelope, and then we can open the envelope and compare it to your paper, that's evidence. And so we can do that both with telepathy and with remote viewing. And so for me, those are the most fun classes to teach. And it really shows people that we're really are at a very deep level connected with each other, with this reality, with planet Earth. And there really aren't very many or any boundaries between us. Although the connection is it's invisible inherently, but there is some communication happening. So that's how I got involved in all this,
That's so cool. I love it all. I can't, we're almost like got a similar story in that with the religion thing, like I was the one that would get kicked out of religion class at school for asking too many questions. Because I'm the same as you. I'm like, cool, tell me the thing. But then if it doesn't match up or make sense or I want to know more, I'm going to challenge it. And so, yeah, I got booted out of religion because it just so funny. But yeah, so I'm the same as you. I boycotted religion. And it's just like be nice, live a good life, like be kind to each other and don't do harm. You know, that's my religion. And yeah, it's more spiritual now. I'd love to hear like your out of body experience. You know, what was it that happened or what did you experience to go, oh, there is more?
Well, it was just so with these experiences, it's conscious separation from the body. So I'll tell you, my very first one, it was actually a halfway out of body experience. I was laying on the couch. So I would train usually around 3 o'clock in the morning. I would also train in the afternoon and as I was falling asleep at night. But I would set my alarm to wake me up at 3 o'clock in the morning so that I could move to my training room, which is the living room, lay on the couch, and then practice one of the visualizations that I preferred to use. That was designed to provoke the out-of-body experience. And so I was laying there. And the reason why I do it at 3 o'clock in the morning is because the body is still very much asleep, but the mind is a little more awake. And then you can let the mind relax more. And that's the ideal state, that your mind is alert, not too alert, but just a little bit alert, and your body is very much asleep. So it's numb. So I started doing the visualization. And then I started to feel these vibrational sensations. So it's in some people call it the vibrational state, but it can mean anything. It can mean a feeling of vibrations in the body. It can mean strange auditory phenomena. It could feel like someone else is in the room, but probably nobody's there. But your brain is starting to produce different phenomena because this is a strange state it's not used to. That your non-physical consciousness is going to shift or move away from associating with the physical body. So it's not used to that. So I start to feel the sensations, and then the next step is really to point one's attention somewhere else in the room or outside of the room to act as a magnet, to draw out the consciousness away from the body. So I did that. I pointed my mind at the door without looking at it. I just knew it was over there, so I wanted to go over there. And then I started to feel movement. And I'm laying down on the couch, and this movement was as if gravity had taken hold of my consciousness. And I slide off the couch, and I'm stretching across the floor like a snake. And when that first started to happen, I couldn't see anything. Now, of course, in the out of body state, we don't have physical eyes. And the mind has to sort of create a visual perspective without the eyes and the brain. So it tries to reproduce something. So it was dark, and then my mind started operating visually, and I could turn around with my intention and see that I was across the room on the floor, hovering. But in a sense, my legs, my astral legs, let's say, were still, some part of me was still connected to my body, but I was stretched out across the floor. This might sound strange because here I am stretching across the floor like a snake, and part of me is still stuck to my body. But I realized that I was out there. I could see my body, and then here I was, that me, my sense of me was over here, my body was there. And I thought, okay, that's why I no longer need to be afraid of death, because this part of me that's over here can survive after this body is dead. Now, that last little bit, that's still a leap in faith. It's still a leap, because the only way I'll know for sure ever is after I die.
Yeah.
Because until then, there's still the connection between physical brain and then non-physical consciousness. We're still operating together because we're connected and my body's alive. And some of your listeners may already be familiar with the out-of-body state, and it can occur in different ways. Sometimes when a person goes out of the body, they have no sense of form. So I had a sense of form like a snake that time, but sometimes I've been out with no form whatsoever, just a point of consciousness that I could perceive things around me. Sometimes I did have a form like a human being, but it was all dark, filled with million points of light in the skin, just shimmering. So I've had that experience too. So it can happen in different ways. And that could also be because of the subjective nature that my mind or consciousness is just trying to give me something to hold on to preserve my sense of self. It's giving me the form that thinks it can manage in the moment. So, but that contrast of seeing myself away from my body, that's really what relieved me of that fear.
Yeah, definitely. I can understand that. And because it was a felt experience, it's not like you just read it in a book. It's like you actually went through that, so you can understand it more and actually have faith in what could happen. Yeah, that's so cool.
Yeah, it's not the out-of-body experience is different from the dream state. It's vivid. It's just as awake as we are now talking to each other, if not even more awake. Things take on an even more realistic quality. It's very real. I tell people that it's like walking through a doorway in your house. It's nothing changes. It's, you walk from one room to the other, there's no difference. It's very real. That's how it is. So it's not, there's no question. Like, was I making it up? Did I imagine it? Am I fantasizing? No, it's as real as being in this body is. No.
That's awesome. I hope everyone gets to experience that. I mean, I guess we all will when we die, but hopefully more people will get to experience it, like in this waking world. That's awesome. So that was the beginning of it, and that's what like opened your, I was going to say opened your eyes, but really it opened your mind to all these extra possibilities. So then when you experience that, is that what then led you to going into like learning about psychic experiences as well?
It was having my out-of-body experience was like opening a toy box. Oh, there's all these other toys.
Yes.
And what else is in there? What else can we do? What else are we capable of? Because until then, I'd heard or read about special people doing psychic things, like saints or yogis or people who specifically train their mind all their life, their very spiritual life, or people born with certain abilities, or maybe someone like Uri Geller, who as a child he had a UFO contact and he got blasted by a light in the sky, and that's when he was able to move clocks with his mind and bend spoons. It was after his encounter with a UFO. So they gave him that ability, according to his biography and his stories. But I thought, what? I'm not any of those people, but I think everyone has it in them. So I really wanted to see what else can I do, and how can I help other people discover this in themselves? Because frankly, I was back then. I was more angry at religion for a variety of reasons, partly having to do with issues of power and control from spiritual leaders that I'd experienced directly. And I just wanted to let people know you don't have to give your power to another person to pursue a spiritual life or to learn about your potential. All you need are instructions that you can follow on your own. So I wanted to discover these abilities for myself. And it was my spiritual path. It wasn't for anything else. It wasn't for fame or anything. It was for my own discovery, my own self-empowerment. These are things that I could call mine, that nobody gave them to me. I didn't have to ask anyone for it. These were mine. I worked on them, I earned them, and they're mine. Because there are a few things in life that we can say that about, really. Except things like, the people we love and their love for us, that's ours. Our deep-seated beliefs are ours, but usually they're given to us as children. So that even those aren't ours, really. they're programmed into us. So in a sense, consciousness abilities or psychic abilities are things that are inherent in us, but we need to recognize them, witness them, experience them, and then claim them. I've heard so many stories about people experiencing a psychic phenomenon in their life. Maybe they're even, they have a psychic moment or a telepathic moment, but their belief system tells them it's evil or that it's impossible. So they block it, or they deny it, or they feel shame about it, or they feel sinful about it or evil, or they just don't feel good about it, which is sad, because I don't think consciousness abilities are good or bad. They're natural, like gravity and time. Consciousness is just a natural element.
Yeah, I think it's like, have you heard of the witch wound? And it's like, back in the day, you know, they used to burn witches at the stake and be like, oh, magic is evil, you know? And I've heard that it's carried through generations, and it's now called the witch wound, where like, if in your ancestry you had someone who was psychic or had these powers, and they used to get called witches, and then they were punished for it or murdered for it, and that carries through the generations. So then, you know, I have people come to me a fair bit who've had psychic dreams and precognitive dreams and things like that, and they just freak out about it and, yeah, kind of want to deny it and don't believe that that's actually possible, and try to come up with every other excuse under the sun to understand it. Because they feel a little bit of, like you said, like shame or fear around the fact that it is possible to do all these amazing things.
Yeah, and oh, so much to say about that. I'm so glad you taught me that term. I'm going to use that from now on, because, you know, we can be still wounded in this life by, if you have an experience, you tell your friends and family, they might ostracize you. If you tell your coworkers, you could lose your job, especially airline pilots who report seeing UFOs. But anything, you know, your career could be at risk, especially if you're in a university setting or any place where you represent an organization. If you were to say something that contradicts their beliefs or that's too strange, you're out. You lose your job, lose your income, lose everything. So witches are still being burned at the stake. In some sense these days. But to connect to the deeper meaning of that, I think there's something to what you said. When I did LSD, there was a time I did LSD 2 years ago, and many things happened during that journey. It was at least 12 hours. It was a high dose. And one of the things that happened was I had a past life regression, and I've never had one before. I've never tried. I'm not particularly interested. But while I was laying down, tripping on acid, suddenly I was present in another body, sitting in a room in a stone building, but it looked like a dining room of some type. And it felt like it was 200 years ago or 300 years ago, someplace in Europe. And I was wearing different clothes, and I was just sitting in this big wooden chair. And there was this window in front of me, but it was sort of foggy, or it was not clear. But I was just sitting there, and then I heard a loud explosion, and something came through the window, and I knew instantly it was a bullet or something from a rifle or something came in and shot me dead. And I re-experienced a death. And it really felt, I just had this feeling, I think I just experienced my past death. And instantly, I was relieved of an anxiety that I've lived with all my life, of this feeling that someone's coming to get me, that something's going to happen. And that past life regression explained it, because somebody was coming to get me, and they got me, they killed me. Mm-hmm. And so the fear associated with that, I think, may have carried over into this lifetime. I still have it, actually. It didn't all go away, but a lot of it went away. And it was just immediately after that spontaneous past life regression. So I could see how someone wounded in a previous lifetime because they were murdered because of they exhibited certain abilities or because they have a different belief system, that they might still have that anxiousness in this lifetime that it could happen again, especially if they're exhibiting their own psychic abilities. Yeah.
So since you started playing around with psychedelics and understanding psychic abilities and all of these different things that you've been doing, like what happened with your dreams?
So there was a period, and this was back when I did the LST 2 years ago, and I was doing some formal research. I gathered a team of participants to see if psychedelics could increase psychic abilities. And the first 6 months of that study involved microdosing psilocybin and Amanita muscaria mushrooms. So three of us were microdosing, and then the rest of the team was not. They would be the control subjects. And what I noticed soon after beginning the microdosing was that my dream life became a lot more vivid, and I was remembering more dreams each night. Other psychological effects happen. About 4 or 5 weeks into it, actually, I realized I'd been depressed all my life, because one morning I woke up and my depression was gone. And I had to ask my wife, you know, this is how I feel. Is this how normal people feel? She's like, yeah, I think I've been depressed all my life, because the psilocybin just lifted it up along with some anxiety. So that was another benefit. And maybe that was tied to why I was having more vivid dreams too, and more dreams. Like, does anxiety dampen the ability to recall dreams?
Yeah.
Or does it shrink the REM period in each sleep cycle?
Both.
You know? Yeah.
Because when you're anxious, you're not able to relax into such a deep REM either. So you're kind of like up a bit more. But definitely, like, and with anxiety, it affects heaps of things to do with your sleep. Like, you won't go to bed early. Like, you usually wake up a lot throughout the night, or wake up in the middle of the night with all these things going through your head, worrying about it. So yeah, definitely.
So that's a benefit to psilocybin that people don't talk about. They talk about depression, anxiety, creativity. But for anyone out there who has trouble dreaming, here's the benefit to microdosing psilocybin: is to increase your relaxation, decrease your stress, sleep, have better sleep quality. And then in the early morning, very long REM stages, rapid eye movement, if you can sleep through that instead of waking up too early, that's when the richest dreams occur. And I was having some really interesting dreams. At the time, my father had been to the hospital because of something that happened to him. And I started to have a series of dreams that seemed to foretell his death. They were really sad, but very, very symbolic. And it was like they were telling me, oh, it's happening very soon. He's going to be gone very soon. So I spent months having these dreams occur once in a while. And I was already having anticipatory grief, the kind of grief you have before the event because you know it's coming. So I was already in a grief state, expecting my dad to be dead soon. But he's alive still, 2 years later, and he's actually healthier now than he was back then. So I thought that these were dreams telling me the future, but they were really dreams telling me what I was worried about. I was worried about my dad, and these dreams took it up another degree. They intensified how much fear I had about his death. So I misread those dreams, you know. But even this morning, I was having coffee with someone who told me that he did have a dream involving, it was either his father or grandfather, I don't remember the details. And I can't reveal the description because he didn't give me permission. I just want to maintain his privacy. But his father or grandfather featured in the dream. They were doing something symbolizing saying goodbye. And the next day he found out that at the same time he was having that dream, that person had in fact died. So I know that it's a possibility for people to have premonitory dreams, psychic dreams, foretelling dreams. But for me, it hasn't been a big feature of my life, but I love dreaming. And there was a period of time when I was training for the out-of-body experience that I was also training in lucid dreaming. So I was having lucid dreams, but even those weren't particularly psychic. I have ideas for how people could attempt to use clairvoyance in the dream state with a lucid dream, but I've never practiced it myself. It's just, I focus on one topic at a time and then I move on to the next topic, move on. So I'll have to go back to the lucid dreaming someday and try to combine that with remote viewing to see if we can really use clairvoyance consistently with good accuracy. So
what would you
something
do
I have to
in
go
a
back to.
lucid dream if you were wanting to practice clairvoyance? What would you do? Let's say we were in a lucid dream we're at now. What would you do?
So we'd have to set up a specific thing that we want to perceive. Let's say, here's a fun way to do it. Everyone could start doing this right away. Let's say you have two or three friends who want to do this experiment with you, and you can take turns that one person will be the dreamer, and the other three, the next day, when the dreamer wakes up, they're going to go to a location that is very specific. For example, they could go to an amusement park. They could go to a music concert. They could go skydiving. Something intense and very specific. And definitely the more intense the experience, the better. So they go and have this experience that next day. But the night before, the dreamer sets their intention. And they might tell their mind, they could use dream incubation, where you feed your mind. Tell me, dear mind, tell me, dreams, where my friends will be tomorrow. What are they going to experience tomorrow? And you could say at 3 o'clock, and they just have to make sure that they're having the experience at 3 o'clock. But I want to know now. And then they use whatever talent they have at lucid dreaming to become lucid in the dream, and also bring back the invocation. Like, I want to see what my friends will be doing at 3 o'clock tomorrow, and what happens during the lucid dream, or what happens during the early morning dreams too. What do they remember? And then write it all down, write everything down. And then when they wake up, they should not be in contact with their friends. But then their friends go and have their experience. They go jump out of a perfectly good airplane and they could take photos or whatever. And then they come back and then they show their friend what they did, or tell their friend. And then they compare her notes to their photographs, or just to their story, what they experienced, and see, was there anything in common? And then they can take turns. Every week, they switch roles. One, a different person is the dreamer, and the other three go and have another unique experience. And that's a really fun way to do it.
Like, can I sign up? This sounds awesome. I've tried doing something similar with a friend in the dream space, where we decided we'd have a code word. So once we become lucid, just like ask a dream character or anyone we can find, do you know what the code word is? And yeah, it didn't quite work out, but she came back with a code word that was very unique to me anyway, like, and that she had no idea about. So she was like, oh, I picked up the word gymnastics, and she didn't know, but I used to be a gymnast, and my daughter has been begging to start gymnastics, like every day. She's like, can we go to gymnastics? So I found that really, really interesting. It's like, that's really cool. She had no idea. She's on the other side of the world and doesn't know what we speak about at home. So it's really cool.
Sometimes the mind knows what we're trying to achieve. You know, we're looking for evidence that we can do something. We're looking for evidence of the interconnectedness of consciousness. So maybe if it didn't give you the code word, maybe you knew that that wasn't the best way. But this would be a way that you couldn't argue against. That it's like, I know what I'll do for her. I'm going to tell her the word gymnastics. That'll really, that might be better. So sometimes our deeper mind is smarter than our ordinary everyday mind.
Yeah. And I was probably trying to pick a code word, like consciously just picking something, when really she was picking up on a word that I was constantly hearing throughout the day. And that was like deeper into my subconscious. Yeah, that's so cool. I was going to go back and talk to you about microdosing with psilocybin, because I was recommended to do it to heal my ADHD. Because I have it quite severely, and I was like heavily medicated for a long time and just wanted to go off everything, and I was not taking anything. But then when I wanted to do better at work, thought, I need something, medication, I'm sick of talking over the top of people and I speak too fast and my mind jumps around, and it was just frustrating. So a naturopath suggested microdosing psilocybin, and it definitely helped with my ADHD, but I think the thing that it helped the most with was my emotions and being able to actually put them into words. So usually I'd get emotional about something and then just lose the plot and walk away and not be able to have an adult conversation about it. And then I found when I was microdosing, I would get frustrated about something, but then I'd be able to sit down and say, you know what, this is actually like triggering something from my childhood. And I'd be able to sit there and communicate that with my husband or whoever I was with and do so much healing. And then it just, I don't know, it was just incredible about how it was connecting things in my brain. And when I was trying to explain things, not fumbling over my words and just being able, they were flowing out of me. And I was thinking, this is the first time in my life I've ever been able to speak this clearly. And as I was speaking, I was just like amazed at what was coming out. It was like I was listening to someone else. Or so it was so, so helpful. And I didn't know at the time that it would also increase my dreaming life. Now I was having the dosages in the morning to then help me throughout the day, but I found that it would amplify whatever was going on for me emotionally. So if I was stressed and anxious about something, it would just make me feel more stressed and anxious, and I didn't like that. But if I was feeling good, I would feel extra good. And then someone wrote to me because I was putting on Instagram about like dreaming supplements and what enhances them. And it was more like blue lotus flower and mugwort and things like that. And someone wrote to me saying, microdosing mushrooms is like the best thing. And I was like, really? I already have been, but I've been having it in the morning. So I didn't like that because it was sort of like whatever the day throws at me, I'm going to have to try to handle with this like amplified feelings. And I was kind of struggling with that because I'd cry at the drop of a hat or like was a bit much, but I could definitely tell it was helping to heal me. So then I decided to switch and start taking it at nighttime, right before bed, because I thought, I'm an active dreamer. I do so much work in the dream world in healing myself. Why not do it at nighttime instead? So then during the day, I can kind of handle myself a bit better. And that was just the absolute best thing for me. And even though it would sometimes create extreme intense nightmares, I was like, they were very symbolic, and I was able to write it all down and then go back and go through it and interpret it all. And it would highlight like five or six different areas in my life that I could work on and give me different perspectives and all of this stuff. So it still took it out of me, but it was so worth it. And it just like, it blew my mind. Absolutely blew my mind. So it's just made me so curious about it. But yeah, like psychic future dreams and things like that were also coming through. It was just so interesting. So I want to hear about like your studies and the project that you worked on. I want to hear about like what were you doing with these psychedelics and how to enhance the psychic abilities. What were your findings from the project? Like, I just want to hear it all.
Yeah, so everybody involved in the project had homework. I gave them books that were this thick, and they were to take several psychic tests each week for 6 months. So they made a large commitment. And I always am so grateful that they were willing to do that much work. But several times a week, they would engage in different types of ESP tests, like a remote viewing test. And then once a week, we'd get together on Zoom, actually practice telepathy or be tested on telepathy, where I would have a target, a picture, and I would be sending it to them mentally, and they all had to just relax and try and receive what I was sending and then write down their impressions on paper and then send it to me via email. And I would compare their transcripts to the target that I was sending them. So that was a lot of fun. And when I was sending it, I would turn off my camera. So they couldn't see my facial, they couldn't receive any kind of hint about the image at all. Part of this involved drawing with my pen over the picture to try and send the shape of the boundary of it. And these are just very simple drawings. And they're all in the book, so readers can see the target and what people drew. And like the main title is Dewdrops of Infinity, which doesn't say anything. It's a reason for it, but it's not obvious in the beginning. But so they would do that kind of telepathy test. I would send them a coordinate via email for remote viewing. And the coordinate was a 6-digit number that represented a target, a picture that I would show them a week later. And so they would sit down, focus on the coordinate, draw or write down what came to them and email it to me. And then another fun test we did was I sent them sets of tarot cards or double sets. So they'd have two sets of six cards, both shuffled. And while they were blindfolded and using a special barrier so they couldn't see, they would have to make one row of tarot cards match the row. So basically feeling the card with their mind, and they would put their hands over it just to feel through the hand the quality of this card, and then find a card in the upper row that matched that one. And one person actually matched all six cards. And the way she wrote a note to me when she succeeded that way, that she said that on that particular test, when she would hear a tone in her ear, that signaled to her that the cards matched. And then she'd hear a tone and match it. And for that session only, it worked. And it gave her a perfect match of six cards to the other six cards. So these are the kind of tests we did for 6 months together. And three of us were microdosing. And so everything we did was scorable. I could put a numerical score as to their accuracy of their psychic perception. And it wasn't until over a year later when I was able to collate all the scores and everything. So in the first year, it was just gathering the information. Then I had to sift through it. And when I did, I found out that microdosing psychedelics did not increase anybody's psychic ability. But everybody was very, very psychic. So in the book, you'll see the skills of the people who didn't microdose were amazing. And the people who microdosed were also amazing. I mean, it's just the evidence is all over the place. It's all there for the reality of psychic functioning. But psilocybin and Amanita muscaria microdosing didn't appear to improve, at least significantly, some people's abilities. But then in the second 6 months of the study, which involved just me, I took large doses of those substances. And also LSD, LSA, and one session with DMT. And still, I can't say for sure whether they improved my ability, although some of the best sessions I've ever had in my life happened under the influence. So I'd be fully under the influence of psilocybin, hallucinating, wearing a blindfold, and doing all these tests. And in this case, my wife would be the telepathy partner, where she'd be sending the target. I'd be trying to receive it. And I'm having to manage all the hallucinations in my mind because I thought maybe the psychic information would be in the hallucination, but it would come to me that way. But I realized that it didn't. But what it showed me was, don't look over here. Don't look at the hallucination. Look over here. I had to look around my mind. Which is really strange to describe because it's really beyond words, but looking beyond the thinking mind, including the hallucinating mind, I had to move around it, which was a really strange experience. You know, nobody trains you how to do that. I just had to figure it out and find the psychic information in this unknown space that I think is outside of the brain, outside of the physical brain. So I had to learn to adjust my focus while I was fully tripping out on these hallucinogenics. And I think that's why I was consistently better at the tests than I am in ordinary life. You know, it's typical for someone practicing any of these abilities to have good days and bad days, good days, bad days, you know. But when I did these tests, I was consistently doing well. So maybe the hallucinogenics themselves didn't make me more psychic, but they helped me learn how to use my mind better, which anyone can do with regular old meditation. Like, psychedelics are not the only way to do this.
It sounds like the psychedelics kind of made the symbols or the hallucinations clearer for you, like more clarity on that. So then it was easier for you to find the way to go around into like the abyss to get the answer. Whereas without them, it's hard for us to differentiate between like in your sober mind as to like what's a symbol and where's the clarity and like how can I go around and it's sort of too your consciousness is too in your face to be able to go around it, whereas the mushroom sort of seems like it splits your consciousness a little bit better so then you can kind of go around clearer. I understand what you mean when you're saying to go around it or to, yeah, mm-hmm. go past it.
Yeah, I think what you just said is very well put, that it made it easier to differentiate the information from the noise, for sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's so fascinating. And what I get from that is that, and I say this a lot, is that we are all psychic. Mm-hmm. And we are. And it's like you said, some people don't believe it, but we all have the ability. It's just something that you can train in to learn how to do. Yeah.
Yeah, when I teach classes in person, they're 2 hours long, and they're usually divided by the first hour is hardcore training. I'm starting to call it basic training. Some drills to open the mind and to train the mind. And then the second half is playing some sort of game to test out people's ability. And every time it's so, I don't know why I still get surprised, but I'm amazed and surprised and impressed that everyone who shows up, when they work hard at it, they see it for themselves. They have these psychic effects. And some of them come in saying, I've never had a psychic experience. But after 2 hours, they're getting their own evidence that they can perceive across space and time or perceive what's happening in someone else's mind. They just have to try. And yeah, I agree with you that everybody is. Everyone has consciousness. It's a ability of consciousness. It's natural. It's just about bringing it out, you know?
Yeah. So there's all different types of psychic abilities. Like you were saying, that one woman could hear a noise and some people can kind of see things and some people would have like a felt sense, and it's all the different types of clairs. Do you have a way, or do you have any tips that you could give to the listeners on how to figure out their best way of kind of connecting with their own psychic abilities?
It could be about, if they want to go about it in a structured way, so this would require time and effort. It could be something similar to the dream experiment we talked about earlier, where you set your intention to dream about what your friends are doing the next day. So they could go have a physical experience, like they could go and take a boxing class so they would feel the impact on their body, and then see how the person does perceiving the sensations in their body. Or they could go to, like here in Colorado in Boulder, there's a tea company and they sell different flavors of tea, and you can go to their warehouse and open these huge doors and these huge rooms filled with, for example, mint or peppermint tea. And it's the famous room because you walk in there, your eyes start watering and everything burns because it's the most intense peppermint smell ever. So your friends could go to someplace where smell is the main thing. And so if the friend trying to be psychic picks up an odor that connects with that experience, then maybe that's their strength. Mm-hmm. Same thing. Your friends could say, we're going to go have dinner or have lunch tomorrow at a cultural restaurant or some restaurant that has a specific menu. And now the other friend is sitting at home trying to pick up what are they tasting? Are they tasting Indian food, Chinese food? Are they tasting shrimp? Are they tasting beef? Or are they just having ice cream? Do they taste something sweet? So they could test out that sense that way. And then with the sound, one way to do this is the person testing their perceptions is in one room, and then their friends are in another room, and they all have their headphones on, but they're all listening to a particular genre of music. Mm-hmm. Are they listening to rock music? Are they listening to classical music? Are they listening to drumming? And can the person trying to perceive, can they hear it? And they should write down, what are the things they're getting? A rhythm, a sound, an emotional quality? And then when the experiment is done, go to the other room and listen to what their friends had been listening to and see, oh yeah, I do have a knack for clairaudience in that case, the clair of hearing. Yeah,
that's really good advice. That'd be also really fun. Mm-hmm. I like the thing about these experiments is you get to go out for dinner and go to theme parks and do all this awesome stuff. That's so cool. So yeah. With your background in meditation teaching, I wanted to know, how do you incorporate those practices Do you use meditation for enhancing psychic awareness? Are there any specific techniques that you find particularly effective?
For the psychic development, I think meditation is really important. And it's also important for dreaming and lucid dreaming. They know statistically that meditators have more lucid dreams than non-meditators do. And I think that's really about being able to pay close attention to your experience and catch those things that don't make sense. So one way to trigger lucid dream, right, is to identify when something isn't quite right, something doesn't fit. If you're a meditator, you're used to that. You're used to observing your mind and the images and the daydreams that come in. And sometimes they're very strange, but you become very sensitive to that. So in the dream state, you're just automatically more sensitive to that as well. And you could trigger a lucid dream that way. With psychic development, I think meditation is also very, very helpful because it clears out the noise. It's better, it's easier to perceive when you're a blank slate or a peaceful slate. And then when the psychic impression comes, it's like dropping a stone in a pond of water. And the water is still enough that the ripples are quite obvious. But if the water is always moving, because our modern lives are so noisy and distracted, then a psychic impression gets lost in the noise. So if your mind is naturally throughout the day a little bit more calm than usual, and then right before a psychic experiment, if you can train yourself to instantly relax and drop down, maybe drop down from a beta wavelength down to theta or alpha, then theta, if you can do that on call because you've trained in meditation, that'll help you discern the psychic information a lot easier. And I wouldn't say, you know, just meditating once before a psychic test isn't really going to help. Meditation is most effective when it's been a regular part of your life for at least a few months to a few years, that it becomes part of who you are and it shapes your brain. Actually, there's evidence that it actually changes your brain structure if you're a regular meditator for several years, like, and what it does to the amygdala and how you respond to the stress of life.
Yeah.
That's cool. It is tricky at first to start meditating. I've been doing it for a few years and I found that when my psychic messages come in for me through meditation, it's at that point where there's like no thoughts and there's just, in my mind, it's like blackness, like where you just open for anything to come in and you don't have all the traffic of your thoughts coming through. But like we said, I have ADHD, so it's really, really hard to stop my thoughts because I usually have about 3 or 4 different thought patterns all happening at once. And I found this technique, I made it up. I don't know if it's a real thing or not, but it worked for me. And it was like imagining my thoughts like my breath and that it's just constant. But you know how you can hold your breath? So it was like the thoughts would be going and then I'm like, okay, ready? Like 1, 2, 3. And I would be like, and just hold and just like stop the thoughts. And then I could feel that like black point. And then I'd have to separately go back to my body and be like, okay, you can continue to breathe, but the thoughts will stay stopped. And then I'm like, because otherwise I'm just sitting there holding my breath and holding my thoughts all at once. And there's too much pressure for anything to come through. But I found that was really helpful for me.
Yeah, that's a great technique. I don't think I've heard of that before. So yeah. That's a good one. Listeners, remember this one. That's a good one to try. Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool. Cool. So throughout the experiment, you mentioned, I'm going to go to the weird side now. You mentioned a guy that encountered unusual events such as UFO. Can you share more about that? And how it kind
of related? Yeah. You mean my encounters during the project?
Sure, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Encounters? Yeah, I'd rather hear yours. Yeah.
Well, So yeah, I did name the project after Andrea Puharich, this researcher who died in 1995, but he inspired the project in a way because he had done research in the 1960s using psychedelics to affect psychic abilities. But he also had his own connections with UFOs. He'd done research with Uri Geller and they had contact. So they were communicating with UFOs. And they should, if they're curious about that, they could read Andrea Puharich's book. I think it's called the Journal of Uri Geller, something like that. But it goes into details. So that guy inspired me in a way to do this project. Just the memory of him, and I saw old videos of him. The one thing that happened, I've had UFO sightings in the past, but it'd been a long time. But one thing happened was, if I remember correctly, it's either after one day of doing psilocybin or the night, yeah, it must have been after psilocybin. That evening, my wife drove me to the grocery store so we could get some food. I couldn't drive. So she drove me, but when we were driving back home, I looked in the sky and I saw something. And then the other time it happened was the day after I smoked the DMT for the telepathy test. I was driving, I went to a coffee shop, and then when I was driving home, I was stopped at a light. And I just happened to look up and there was something there. And both times they disappeared pretty quickly after. It's almost like they could tell that I saw them and then they disappeared. And this makes me wonder if the structure of my whole psychic test was wrong, because when I was testing myself, I was in full on hallucinating. You know, I just drank the psilocybin or taken the LSD. I was in the middle of the experience, the psychedelic experience, doing the tests. But when I saw these UFOs, it was hours or the next day after having taken it, which makes me wonder if the psychic opening really happened after I had my psychedelic experience. Maybe I was taking the test too early, because I think there's a connection in with psychic ability, consciousness, and the ability to perceive UFOs. I've heard so many reports of groups of people looking at the sky, and half the group can see the UFO and the other half can't. They're looking, but they don't see anything because it's about the mind. So this leads me to suspect that something about the psychedelics had opened my mind after I was back to normal. It was still open, and now I was able to see these things in the sky. I mean, I don't
I
really have a
think
way to
so.
prove it
No, I think you're
scientifically,
right.
but no.
Yeah, I mean, I know only once I've had like enough psilocybin to be tripping out, and I feel like the next day I felt so different, and it was like this afterglow effect. And my mind was totally different as well. It wasn't like the same tripping out. I was back to normal. Everything was normal. There was nothing weird going on, but I just felt so different, and my mind felt very open. I would love if you redid or did part two of your research and did it the following day. I'll put my hand up as a guinea pig. I'll do 6 months of this testing. I'm down for it. But yeah, you
I'll
made
keep
me do it.
that
Yeah.
in mind. It was some of the hardest work I've ever done. It was just the whole year was challenging for me to manage all the people and all the tests. But then just, you've tripped on psilocybin. It's hard enough just to experience it, but I had to control myself and my emotions just to get through these tests. It was super hard work. I have video of those tests of me, and it's hard to watch sometimes, because sometimes I'm very emotional, and I'm just not my normal self. But it's very interesting to watch for me anyway, and I think it's probably boring for other people, but because half the time I'm just sitting there and then drawing, making drawings and trying to perceive. But then I'll report on the hallucinations that I'm seeing, and that the look on my face, I'm like this, because
Yeah,
sometimes
it's
on
really
psychedelics
hard
it
to
can feel
function.
like
It's
yeah,
really hard
it
to
is.
function.
There's the body load, there's the physical aspect that's hard on the body and the mind.
Yeah, I found it difficult to do anything. I was trying to walk, and then I was like, this is too hard, so I just lay down on the ground and like on the grass and just felt me going into the earth, and then I felt like the earth flipped upside down, and then I felt like I sort of like, you know where mushrooms have, is it the fungi and the connections all underground and they all talk to each other and things like that?
The mycelial
Yes.
network.
I was like, humans have that and we're all connected through the earth. And then from then on, my husband laughs at me so much because I was the kind of person that could just kill a pot plant. Like I would get plants and love them, but they'd always die and I could never keep any alive. And the next day I was like, oh my gosh, I can hear the plants crying, like they need water. And I just got this connection to earth that was felt, came out of nowhere, but it definitely came from that. And all of a sudden, like our house was full of plants. I was like watering them every day and loving them, and they were thriving. And it was just so funny because, yeah, I went from someone who could kill a cactus to someone whose like whole house was full of plants. And I just felt so connected to the earth. It was amazing.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I love that aspect of the journey, is when nature gets involved and plants and animals. I'll periodically take people, I'll guide them on their journey, or I'll assist them. But sometimes I'll take them to the zoo first, or to the botanic gardens as a preparation, because so many people who live in the city have very little connection on a regular basis to nature. Maybe I'm sure Australia is different, but here in Denver, Colorado, it's a big city. The mountains are, they're over there, but it's still possible to feel detached from nature. So I take people to the zoo so they can look at the animals and the patterns on their skin, because patterns show up during the psychedelic journey, that maybe in the journey, an animal might show up with a message, or the plants might start speaking, like you connected with the plant life. So that's why I really recommend, for especially for first timers, if you're going to do your journey for the first time, go to the zoo or go to the beach, go to the jungles, go to the forest first, and make a connection, and then have your journey and see what happens.
Yeah, that's great advice, definitely. Teaching psychic abilities and meditation, both in person and online, it must be incredibly rewarding. What do you find most fulfilling about guiding others on their spiritual journey?
It's, part of it is just the friendship that can develop, because it's, in a way, for me, it's a sacred task. You know, I'm not just teaching some cool tricks or anything like that. I'm connecting with people on a very subtle level. And it's not like I'm doing anything to their mind or anything, but it's just to be in the room when someone is experiencing their own abilities for the first time. It's, I really respect that moment. You know, it's sacred, it's personal. It's, and when someone's willing to do that in a group, they're really showing their deepest self. I don't normally use the word soul or spirit, but I'll just use it here. Like, they're showing, when someone shows you a psychic ability, they're showing you there's the communication of the soul, which is very intimate. It's a lot more intimate than what we can show each other with the body. Most people think, you know, seeing someone naked is the most intimate thing you can do, but it's not. Yeah. Seeing into someone's consciousness is the most intimate thing you can do with another person. And when we're in a classroom or at a retreat training, or even just meditating together for several days, we really open up to each other and these things come out, and it's, everyone's very sensitive then, and we have to be delicate with each other, be very gentle. So it's a really beautiful thing to witness, and, you know, and I'm always honored to be part of it. I also just love teaching. If it wasn't psychic abilities, I'd teach people how to tie their shoes, you know, whatever the thing is. It's not really about that. Also, it's just the act of teaching and watching people learn. It's really fun for me. But I've made wonderful friends over the years from doing this work. And I learn, you know, I learn just as much from them as I teach. Sometimes I'll teach a new class and it's because of an idea that came to me. Well, having a conversation with one of the students or one of my friends who I work with regularly, they just inspire me to come up with new ideas. So I can't even take credit anymore for the stuff that I teach. There's, I'm really just reflecting what people are showing me. So,
yeah. You're like a voice for the collective consciousness of everybody. Like, you're just going to stand up there. Everything that you just said then, I deeply resonated with in the way that I do dream therapy. Because, like you said, when you're sharing something to do with your soul, it is more vulnerable than being naked. Like, I believe that we're souls that have just been dropped into these meat suits that we call bodies. And then because of outside conditioning, you know, we learn shame and embarrassment, all this stuff over our physical bodies, but we have no choice over what body we get given. And it's just like a vehicle for us to get around and do stuff. And that when I'm doing dream therapy with people, it's that moment when they have the realization of the messages within their dreams and the intelligence that's coming from their subconscious that they didn't realize. And it's that aha moment of figuring out what a symbol actually means and what's trying to get through. And it's such a special moment of like that, you know, the moment, it's like when their eyes just open and they're like, whoa, mm-hmm. and they have that realization. Yeah. That is like better than any drug for me. I see that and I'm like, yes, it's so special. That's awesome.
Yeah, I think one of the big factors of experiencing happiness in this life is creating meaning. Like just meaning itself is so important, and connection with another human being is the best way to produce meaning. So with your work, with helping people with their dreams, with their consciousness development, that's rich. It's so rich with meaning, you know, more than most other careers on planet Earth. This is very meaning making. So I could see how it'd be so fulfilling for you and your clients, for sure. Yeah.
The whole time while I've been talking to you, I can see the painting in the background. And can you see what's going on there? It's like, this opening in my
head. I'm really lucky because we're trying to sell our home right now. So we had a stager from the real estate company. So this isn't even my painting. Oh, it's really? Just a painting they put here to make the place look nicer. But it looks really great for Zoom, like, you know? Yeah.
Got this opening above your mind, like, yeah. So cool. So through this episode today, is there anything that I haven't asked you about that you wish I'd asked you about, or any other things that you'd love to share?
No, I would just really recommend that people pursue their passion, whether it's dreaming or psychic abilities or psychedelic exploration. It's really easy to grow mushrooms at home, by the way. I don't know the legal status of them in your country.
It's illegal, but I'm just lucky enough that I do live out in nature and there's some huge paddocks around the corner. So,
okay. Yeah. I mean, I grow them in my home inside a plastic container. It's very easy to do. And you can order the materials like the mushroom spores. You can legally order them because they don't contain psilocybin. Mm. So all the materials you need to grow them, you can legally obtain. It's just once you start growing it, you better keep it quiet.
Don't be selling them.
Everyone should feel free to, we all are intrinsic aspects of the universe. So we are empowered to explore our own minds. Please don't be afraid to make your own way, even if it goes against what other people would want you to do, you know? Like you and I, you know, we might have that, what was it called? The witch wound.
Yeah.
You know, maybe there are people out there who had never heard of that before, but they hear that story about the witch wound and go, I think I feel that. That's why I feel like I'm the black sheep in my family. Well, fulfillment and happiness is waiting for you when you start pursuing your unique path.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I just wanted to throw that in at the end because I think that's the most important, or one of the most important messages
really
doing this
is.
Kind of work.
I feel that when my mom is a psychic, and I was like a teenager when she was actually doing it as her job. But I used to get freaked out by it because she'd come home and tell me of like, she'd seen murders and was able to solve mysteries and things, but it seemed very negative to me and I was like scared of that. And so when I first started to have little psychic experiences, I was shutting it down and I was freaked out by it. And I guess I had the witch wound in my generation. So, but it wasn't then when I discovered dreaming, and then that made me feel comfortable with it for some reason. Mm. And that was like my place to shine and how I could ask questions and be curious and like have things explained to me in a way that I understood and I felt comfortable with. I hear of it all the time of people that have these psychic abilities, but they're scared and they shut them down, or they don't want to know more because I don't know why. It's just scary, I suppose. I felt like that. I'm worried about like dark entities coming in and things like that. Do you have people worry
Right.
about that
I
before?
do. Oh, well, no, not before psychedelic journeys. No, nothing like that. But sometimes in a psychic training class, people mention that. And it always comes down to like the biggest cause of that is social media. Because people love telling scary stories, they love inducing fear in people. People love repeating stories or information that may not actually be true, but they like getting the attention that they get from other people or clickbait, you know, the scariest thing. So I think that's to blame, and also Hollywood, so many
Yeah, the
horror films that
movies.
we grew up with, like we're all scarred from watching horror films, even though they're fictional in most cases. Sometimes the brain can't tell the difference between fiction and nonfiction.
Definitely. When it comes with images as well, like the images, our brains believe when we see images. So, yeah, scary movies.
Yeah. So I stopped years ago watching scary movies. I just don't need to be programmed that way. And I ignore social media that's pushing fear-based information. And the funny thing is, I don't have fearful experiences because I don't let that stuff into my mind. You know, I just try and keep a clean house upstairs, you know. And then also there's a religious aspect. You know, people are still influenced by any religious upbringing that tells you you're going to go to hell because you're psychic or because you're doing the devil's work or whatever, you know, or talks about demons. That's programming, you know, whether or not it's true, it's programming. And I think most of it is not true. That's just my opinion. So,
I
it's
think it's a
just.
bit of BS. It's just like people like to have feelings evoked, whether it be like love, excitement, or fear, because it makes us feel alive. That's what I explain to my kids anyway. When they're like, why do people make scary movies if it's not real? Because I'm like, this isn't real. Like, you know, they've got scary zombies and stuff. And I'm like, that's not real. And then they're like, well, how'd they make it if it's not real? Like, how'd they even come up with these ideas? And it's just like, and why? And I was like, because people are bored. They're bored, so they want a thrill. And they don't know how to do fun stuff, so this is what they've come up with. It's
It's true.
adorable. I just think now that I want to learn more about, like you said, psychic testing after the fact rather than during. I can see how stressful that would have been for you trying to do the testing during. Like, what?
But you could, some of the tests that we set up that we talked about earlier, like with your friends having an experience, you try to perceive it. Just have your psychedelic journey, and once you're done, then lay down, relax, and set your intention to perceive what your friends will be experiencing, and see what happens. Or, you know, I'm sure there are other ways you could. You know, you could have a friend put a picture inside of an envelope, and they'll show it to you at 6 o'clock the next day. So you just know that your mind has to go to 6 o'clock. What is the picture that they're going to show you? And whatever comes to you, draw it or write it down. What are you getting? And then you'll find out at 6 o'clock.
So there's something here that I see linking up between like dream powers in your dreams and what you're saying now is that it seems that to get the best effect or to be able to get to what you need is having a target in mind. So you're saying like a target of time or like you had the location like in numbers, coordinates written down, or even with your outer body, it was having a target of the door. And I know with dreaming, it's like if people are struggling to fly, like they're thinking about it in a physical way of their body, and they're usually the ones that are like trying to jump to fly. But if you have the target in mind, so say you're in a dream and you want to fly somewhere, looking to where you want to go, and then aiming for that, and then your mind will take you there rather than thinking about it physically.
Yeah, when I was doing a lot of training in lucid dreaming and the out-of-body experience, I had that experience of once I'm having it, it's hard to remember what I wanted to do, or I'd be distracted by something else happening. So the way I managed that was, before going to sleep, I would write down on a piece of paper what I wanted to experience. Like, I will fly. And someone could do this just for, I will remember that my goal is to fly, or I will fly tonight. I will fly, and write it down 20 times, 30 times. And it makes it easier that once you're lucid or once you're in the out of body state, the memory will come a lot easier. Oh, I want to fly. Because just 3 hours ago, I was writing down the intention over and over again. So that's one way to work with that.
Yeah, that's really good advice. Because, yeah, it's easy to have. I usually have three or four different things I want to try when becoming lucid. And if I've got too many on my mind, none of it happens. It's just good to have one, yeah.
Just focusing on one. And you're right about with this, all the psychic tests and everything, having a specific target. So, and with dreaming, dreams can be very random, but if you've set an intention or incubated the dream the night before, like exactly what do you want to dream about? Then you're forming your mind, forming the intention and the flow of the imagery that will come to you in the dream state. So it's better to be specific instead of let anything happen and maybe there'll be something there for me. It's a little too random that way. So, yeah.
Thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure diving deep into the realms of psychic abilities and psychedelics and the exploration of consciousness with you today. Sean, your dedication to uncovering the mysteries of the human mind and spirit is truly inspiring. So, to our listeners, if you're intrigued by Sean's work and you want to learn more about his research, teachings, or upcoming classes, be sure to visit his website at mindpossible.com. And you can also follow his journey and connect with him on Instagram and Facebook at mindpossible. Sean, thank you for joining me on the Dream Hub podcast and for sharing your incredible insights and experiences. I wish you the best on your continued journey of exploration and discovery. I hope you give me a call to be one of your guinea pigs.
Well, thanks for having me. That was great. Yeah, that was nice.
To my listeners, thank you for tuning in. Remember that the mind holds infinite possibilities, and sometimes it's just a matter of unlocking them. So until next time, keep dreaming, exploring, and expanding the horizons of your consciousness.